This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and the show is called Main Street because our microphones create a virtual Main Street all across the state of North Dakota this time of day. The real Main Streets, those centerpieces of our communities, are where we meet and greet each other, share our news and opinions, talk about this or that. And we're going to be talking about beer in the climate crosshairs. That's an interesting discussion. We'll talk about it with reporter Ari Laveau of the Food and Environment Reporting Network. But first of all, we're going to talk about what they're talking about on Main Street these days, which is, have you heard about those cocoa truffles that you get from Nicole's Fine Pastry during this short and sweet membership drive at Prairie Public?
Yeah, these are radio truffles, so yeah, it gives them a special frequency, you know.
And it's very important because we have our director of radio, Bill Thomas, is with us today to talk about, well, what we're talking about, raising money for membership.
That's right. Prairie Public depends on membership. We want to have listeners. We have to have listeners. That's the reason that we do what we do. And we are a listener-supported station. That means that the main form of our support, the biggest part of our income budget, comes from people who are listeners. People like you who listen to the radio, whether it's through a traditional radio or through the internet, through your phone, through a smart speaker, whatever. You get the service, and you enjoy it, and you learn things from it. You learn about what's going on around the world. You learn what's going on around our region. So we're asking you for your support for that, and any amount, of course, is very welcome. During this short and sweet membership drive, we have a special offer, and we don't talk about CDs or T-shirts or tote bags or mugs. We talk about cocoa truffles. Yeah. We will send a one-pound box of delicious cocoa truffles out to wherever you say in the continental United States in time for Valentine's Day with a pledge of $10 a month, $120 a year. Now, that's a good deal, and it gets you all set up, a nice Valentine's Day, wonderful spirit of giving kind of thing, and you'll be supporting public radio and getting something good to eat as well.
Well, when we walk out on those main streets in our communities across the state of North Dakota, we marvel at what, when we all work together, what we can do. We made a main street. Maybe we built an auditorium or a city center. We all got together and did that. Well, this kind of Main Street needs the same kind of infrastructure support, and that's where members come in. And that's why Bill talks about listeners being the kind of thing that the kind of people we love to hear from. But members are what make it possible for everybody to hear us. And it's a very easy step to become a member. If you haven't taken that step yet, don't be frightened. Just give us a call. 800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org. It does not take much time. We have volunteers hanging by those phones waiting for you to make that call. But it is very important because, as Bill knows, as everybody at Prairie Public knows, the state of North Dakota had to cinch its belt a little tighter last year, and we got squeezed a bit too. And that means we have to turn from one small piece of our funding support, which is the state, to a bigger one, which is you, member support. That's the biggest piece of pie in our budget in terms of revenue, and that's why it's vitally important that during our short and sweet membership campaign that people help us out.
One of the things that I hear from people as they talk about listening to Prairie Public is how it just provides a window on the world. That phrase has come up a few times. The idea that Prairie Public gives you access to information and thoughts and ideas and music from all kinds of places, our own region, of course, and around the world as well. And your support is part of what makes it possible. Now, we talked, the basic pledge during the short and sweet drive is that $10 a month one that gets those cocoa truffles out to you for Valentine's Day. Some people make larger ones. We've had pledges up to $1,000 in this drive, and that is great. And they get more boxes of truffles, too.
So. But we'll take a smaller one.
Yeah, yeah. 800-359-4145. Again, that phone number is 800-359-4145. Or go online to prairiepublic.org. Just put down your information, say how you'd like to pay for it. The monthly payments can come out of your bank account or with a credit card, and you will be doing your part to keep this service going and giving those wonderful truffles for Valentine's Day. 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org, and thank you.
Joining me now is Ari Laveau with the Food and Environment Reporting Network. He's just posted a report titled Beer in the Climate Crosshairs, produced with the Weather Channel. We have a link to this report on our Main Street Facebook page. Ari, let's talk a bit about the barley dilemma here. What is it about climate change in barley that is particularly sensitive?
The reason that climate change is so hard on malt barley is that barley is a very sensitive plant, sensitive to different environmental changes and parameters, and it needs to deliver certain characteristics to the maltsters who purchase the barley and malt it into ready malt barley for beer. And if it doesn't meet those requirements, then it's practically worthless and sold as animal feed.
Wow. So the value of the barley that somebody is growing can be severely affected by the circumstances of the growing season.
Exactly. And the places where barley has really taken hold are places where the weather has been reliably consistent over the years and even generations in some places. And now that's no longer the case.
Well, in 2016, I Googled some stuff. The top three barley-producing states were in this order: Idaho, Montana, where you're reporting from. You joined us by phone from Missoula, and North Dakota. And prior to 2009, North Dakota was the largest producer. So this is an important crop in this northern latitude.
Yeah, barley production has steadily moved westerly from the Midwest around Milwaukee and Wisconsin and Illinois and places like that. And it for a while, as you said, North Dakota was the number one producer, and then it kept migrating west, basically chased out by heat and humidity, which made it favorable for corn and soy, which are more profitable, more reliably profitable, and also incompatible with growing barley.
Well, I noted in your story, I'm going to read a quote from what you wrote, and the report was Beer in the Climate Crosshairs. Barley farming can be especially risky. While the costs of growing the crop are relatively low, the odds of a crop failure are substantial. In fact, barley growing is so risky that in many states, federal crop insurance, which protects against a crop failure or a price collapse, isn't even available.
That's right. You know, you could say that all farming is gambling. You're rolling the dice in quite a few ways. And if you want to take that analogy further, you know, malt barley farming is kind of the derivatives trading end of that. It's like being shot out of a cannon in terms of leverage. But chances are you will miss.
Well, malt barley is an important product around here. I mentioned that we have a malting plant in Moorhead, Minnesota, right across the border from North Dakota. Is there a Norman Borlaug, a Green Revolution kind of agrarian scientist working on malt barley to make something that will work better during climate change?
Yes, there's quite a team, a loosely assembled team in different state universities, including Montana State, collaborating, sharing their research, looking for different ways to breed barley that can produce reliably in different places. And in Ohio, that's going to be a different set of needs than in Montana.
Well, there is something about the research that I read in your article that would make it sort of like a winter wheat.
Right. That's kind of the holy grail, if you will, of barley research and barley breeding, is to develop malt barley that can actually be planted in the fall and have it sprout or germinate and set down roots in the fall and then lie dormant in the winter and take off in spring as soon as it melts. There's a wheat analog to that. It's winter wheat, and it's the top crop in Montana. It does very well because anyone who's planted garlic or overwintered onions or greens, I'm not sure what you can overwinter in North Dakota, but it's kind of nice to plant something in the fall and have it already planted so that as soon as it melts in the spring, it's off to the races. So the trick with barley is to find a variety that is actually cold tolerant, more so than typical barley, and that's counterintuitive because we think global warming, maybe it needs to be heat tolerant, but in fact, what we need is a cold-tolerant barley that can actually withstand the winters, which are still pretty cold. Even in a changing climate, we still have the cold snaps I don't know about you over there, but here in Montana, the cold snaps are just as cold.
Oh, yes. We get just as cold here, too. And we've been told by climate scientists that where we are, this continental climate that we have here is the one that will see the most variation as the planet warms. And you have in your article that climate scientists are predicting statewide temperatures in Montana to rise 4 to 5 degrees Fahrenheit by 2055. And by that time, the part of Montana you were reporting from at the foot of the Rockies on the east slope can expect 28 days a year above 95 degrees. So that would be a bit of change.
That's incompatible with barley growing, from what I understand, except winter barley, of course. That makes winter barley all the more important, because organisms, they seem to be able to withstand cold pretty well. If it's another 10 degrees colder, well, we bundle up. It was negative 62 in Siberia, I think, last week. But we can't just keep taking, 10 degrees hotter. You know, we can't go, 150, 160. You know, it doesn't work that way. So it's going to be tricky for sure, at least for farmers in certain areas. The big corporations are hedging their bets, and they've got the multinationals have barley being grown on 3 or 4 different continents. So, they are preparing for climate change in a different way. They're preparing for climate change in terms of, well, what do we do, if half of our farmers go bust?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Budweisers need to know where that malt barley is going to be, I guess. Climate change is politically charged. Somewhere along the line, this scientific notion that the Earth is warming became politically charged. And I'm just wondering what kind of reaction you get when you're talking to farmers in that part of Montana about a crop that's sensitive to the change in climate, about what they think about climate change.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because it does have this stigma. It has become a taboo topic, especially kind of to say it in that way, to say climate change is bad, whereas if you were to even just say the climate is kind of changing a little bit or something like that, even that takes the edge off of it. But it's interesting, of course, because farmers are some of the most in touch with the earth people there are. I mean, they literally have their hands in the earth. They are very sensitive, like barley, to changing climate. They notice when things are not the same. And so there's this kind of chatter, this kind of murmur going on where people are talking about it, because how can you not talk about the weather when you're a farmer and the weather's changing? They're having this conversation just on their tiptoes around the climate change, because it is very red politically and conservative, and the climate deniers, if you will, have done a good job at making people embarrassed to talk about climate change. I don't know if it's a conspiracy, but that's how it seems.
It just seems odd that modern farmers who rely on a fair amount of science to do what they do, looking at their fields and seeing the kind of damage that an alteration in the climate can cause, not choosing to call it that.
Well, the older generation is a lot less willing, and I think people in general, the more you have invested in an idea, an ideology, the harder it is to just change course. We're not really inclined to do that. We're inclined to stick with it, and the older generation is a little bit more entrenched. The younger generation, not so much. They're the ones who are saying the words, and some of the folks that I profiled in the article, one of whom is actually on the Montana Farmers Union. He's the treasurer, and his dad is a climate denier, and you see that across the barley belt. The younger generation is more able to say it, more able to believe that it's happening and talk about it, and change is happening slowly, I think. I think the more that climate change becomes harder to deny and starts impacting people, in a very apolitical way, I think this is going to not be such a politicized issue. I think it has to be, but I guess that's not really my wheelhouse to make those kind of predictions.
Well, beer is a huge business around the world, certainly in the United States. You mentioned that some producers have barley growers in multiple continents just to hedge their bets about how the weather might affect the growing cycle. So how about individual barley farmers? I mean, is this really a crapshoot every year? Because from the article, I get the impression that around harvest time, just one bad storm can wipe it out.
Right. So barley, of course, is malted to make beer. The malting process involves germinating the barley with some moisture and then halting the sprouting process just barely after it began. But in that small window, a lot of starches have broken down into sugars. These sugars are now available to feed the microorganisms to make beer. So what happened in 2014 was that a huge storm started in Idaho and ripped up the Rocky Mountain front and wetted the entire region just as it was time to harvest the barley. And the barley sprouted in the field instead of sprouting in the malt lab, and all of that barley was lost. So that every barley farmer, barley broker, barley lobbyist, scientist, everyone talks about the storm of 2014 and how the crop is vulnerable. Again, that's another reason why winter barley makes so much sense, is that the barley would be out of the field by then.
And in your article, you mentioned that the Montana Farmers Union, which has hired a team of economists, including a prominent retired professor, to look at how climate change is affecting the state's agricultural sector. And they're reporting estimating a 25% decline in grain production in Montana by 2055.
And that, of course, influences the cattle industry, too, which is it's our second big industry. So between the beer and the burger, climate change is really taking a hit on the American diet.
Now, I report, we interview people who are involved in agribusiness all the time here, but I certainly don't know much about farming. And I was informed by reading your story, which was Beer in the Climate Crosshairs, that corn and barley are not necessarily good neighbors. Why?
No, they're not, because corn carries a bacteria which produces a toxin that's labeled a vomitoxin, which is about as nasty as it seems. And that vomitoxin can infect barley. So whether the barley is ultimately goes on to make beer or feed animals, it's not something that we want in either food chain. And so in Montana, the barley farmers get a little bit ornery if somebody tries to grow corn. They pretty much put the stink on them and chase them out, because they do not want that. You know, one of the reasons why barley production moved west out of the Midwest is because it was so good for corn and soy suddenly with the new heat and humidity. And so barley kept migrating west, got chased out of the Dakotas again by corn and soy and heat and humidity. And now they're at a point where there's no more west to go. They're right up against, you know, all of the real heart of barley country. Other than North Dakota, it's all pushed up against the Rocky Mountains.
Hmm. Well, Ari, you write for the Food and Environment Reporting Network. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, it's a great organization. As a freelance writer, they help me place topics with great outlets like the Weather Channel, mm-hmm. And help bridge the gap. And really what happened, especially with this piece, is I worked in conjunction with Fern to develop the story, edit it, and polish it, and we were able to deliver pretty much a finished product to the Weather Channel. So it's great. It's like having an agent as a writer, because Fern has the connections with all the great outlets and the size and capability to help you produce great work. It's freelance writing can be a really lonely occupation. You're just kind of sitting there at home, and it's great to be a part of a team, and Fern is a great team.
Well, Ari Laveau with the Food and Environment Reporting Network, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The article is Beer in the Climate Crosshairs. It was produced with the Weather Channel. We have a link to the story on our Main Street on Facebook page, and thank you again, Ari, for being with us.
My pleasure.
Are you the very model of the modern sorry Valentine? Your gifts and little sentiments, they never can arrive on time. Well, whether you're a modern lovesick gentleman or lady-o, we surely can assist you with this offer from your radio. Call us on the telephone. It only takes a little time. We'll take your contributions of the eleemosynary kind. Forget the silly tie with hearts or pink blouse with big ruffles. We will send out in your name a box of chocolate truffles.
We will send out in your name a box of chocolate truffles. We will send out in your name a box of chocolate truffles. We will send out in your name a box of chocolate truffles.
Oh, it doesn't get any better than that, does it, Bill?
Artistry in the service of a good cause.
Here's the man himself, the soloist, the man in the Valentine song, of course, the Major General song from the Pirates of Penzance, reworked for Short and Sweet. Our membership drive is underway. Bill Thomas is here with me, our director of radio, who's waiting for those phone calls to ring and get that big record contract, along with all those calls that are going to be sending out a pound of cocoa truffles from the Cole's Fine Pastry to those people who pledge $10 a month, $120 a year as a sustaining member. That's our gift to you because you are thinking of us, and we do need members. So give us a call, 1-800-359-4145, or online at prairiepublic.org.
That's 800-359-4145 or prairiepublic.org. We ask for your support a few times a year here on Prairie Public. Well, two times other than this, and it's become a tradition. In February, we ask people to support Prairie Public because listener support is our most important form of support. And we ask in February because the timing just before Valentine's Day works out so well for sending you out a wonderful thank you gift. So if you pledge at $10 a month or above, we'll send out this one-pound box of delicious cocoa truffles to wherever you say in the continental United States in time for Valentine's Day. But the drive has to be short because we want them to be there in time for Valentine's Day. So if you want to get in on it, go ahead and do it. If you wait too long, it's going to be over. As a matter of fact, the drive only goes through early afternoon on Saturday, the day after tomorrow. We're almost halfway through, and your support would be so much appreciated to help keep this great service going. And we know that you and various other people around you will appreciate the cocoa truffles. 800-359-4145, online at prairiepublic.org.
And you might be saying, well, I'm listening right now. Why should I become a member? And of course, that's the question you have to ask yourself. Because if people just listened and nobody was a member, there would be nothing to listen to. This is member-supported radio. And that means that we have to somehow, inspire people who are listening to take that next step and become a member, become an investor in what you're listening to. Because when you call Prairie Public at 1-800-359-4145, you'll talk to a very friendly volunteer. And that person will ask you just a few questions, because we have to get the information to you and the truffles to you if you come in at that $10 level. And maybe you'll have something to say to us about what we do. Write those notes down. We share them. We talk about what listeners are saying about us because we value your feedback. So become part of the team. Become a member of Prairie Public. Make the call, 800-359-4145, or online at prairiepublic.org.
We have more of Main Street coming, including what's happening, talking with Chef Rosie, the news, Dakota Datebook, all of that supported by you and people like you at whatever amount, whether it's $10, $15, $20, $50 a month to support Prairie Public. It makes a difference in enabling us to pay the budget, keep it going, and as we've been saying, in this pre-Valentine short and sweet drive, we'll send out cocoa truffles to you in time for Valentine's Day. Give us a call, 800-359-4145. Go to the internet, prairiepublic.org. Fill out the information. You'll feel great, and you'll feel even better when those truffles show up. 800-359-4145, prairiepublic.org.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. On any given day, the Grand Forks Airport can be the third busiest in the nation, behind only Atlanta and Chicago in terms of takeoffs and landings. The GFK logged nearly 332,000 operations in 2017. That was up 4.2% from the previous year. Airport Executive Director Ryan Reisinger says the tally includes everything that flies.
Your airlines, your private operations, whether that be corporate aircraft, charters, smaller personally owned aircraft, all of those get factored in. At Grand Forks, the University of North Dakota would be about 95% of our operation.
The airport had a record 366,000 takeoffs and landings in 2012. Reisinger says with an ongoing pilot shortage, UND's training program should remain busy. He says there's room for growth at the airport as well.
Focusing a few areas of development here at the airport for future hangar, private hangars. And so we look at that as continuing to grow as we go forward as well.
Grand Forks consistently ranks in the top 25 for operations among all airports in the U.S. North Dakota's economy slowed slightly in January. Creighton University economics professor Dr. Ernie Goss conducts a monthly survey of supply managers in 9 Midwestern states, including North Dakota. A reading above 50 on the survey indicates a growing economy, while a reading below 50 indicates an economic slowdown. The last several months have indicated growth in North Dakota, but the state's index fell to 49.6 in January, which is down from 55.1 in December. But Goss says getting worried might be premature.
But I think that's just a hiccup. In other words, we've been seeing some very strong growth in North Dakota, and I expect that to continue. One of the issues that came out in our survey is just the difficulty in finding and hiring qualified and workers, and that's certainly true in North Dakota.
Goss says something to keep in mind going forward will be interest rates. He says we may be in for more rate hikes than usual.
We're seeing higher inflationary pressures. That's from our survey. That's from other surveys. And that means higher interest rates. So the Federal Reserve meets again, the rate setting committee, on March the 15th. They're going to raise rates at that meeting. Instead of 3 rate hikes this year, we could have more than 3 rate hikes. That will depend on inflationary pressures as the Fed attempts to at least slow that inflation in the pipeline.
Goss says overall, one of North Dakota's biggest issues will be what happens to oil prices, which have moved to between $60 and $70 a barrel. He says he believes oil prices will stabilize, which will lead to more jobs, and that will be good for the state's energy economy. And the North Dakota Public Service Commission will hold a hearing on a proposed South Dakota wind farm. Xcel Energy, which is still registered in North Dakota as Northern States Power, is proposing a 302.4-megawatt wind farm to be built near Watertown. The utility has asked for an advanced determination of prudence from North Dakota regulators. That approval would make it easier for the utility to get financing for the project. Here's Commissioner Brian Crotius.
NSP right now seeks to qualify for 80% of the production tax credit, meaning this facility would have to be placed in service by the end of 2021. They stated that in their application as one of the drivers for wanting to build this. And some issues we'll be considering and looking at. Does this provide reliable and affordable energy to consumers? That will be a big part of this, as well as the cost comparison versus other similar projects in terms of construction costs.
The hearing will be held March 21st. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and it's time to talk with Chef Tim Rosendahl of Rosie's Downtown Bistro in Fargo about the Super Bowl, because he's working it. Tim?
Well, you know, I worked on a project called Super Bowl Logistics, and it's just kind of keeping track of the numbers of food, the numbers of people, what they're asking for, and kind of an over. What I want to give you today is an overview, if you will, of what the most asked for food and how the labor worked. But it wasn't nearly as exciting as I thought, because it's, you know, it's food for the masses, no matter how you look at it. It's people coming from all over the country and all over the world. And yes, there's always the push for a little more healthy and maybe not as much fried, and we want something organic and natural and free range and, you know, all the yuppie words with food. But the bottom line, we end up with chicken wings and nachos and pizza and the things that the masses still. Just look around your hometown. How many pizza joints are there? How many wing joints are there?
So how many people are you preparing food for, this group you're working with?
Well, the number of people, of course, there's 70,000 people in the stadium, but they say there's going to be 1 million people in Minneapolis for the game, you know, that are celebrating the Super Bowl for the 10 days, not just the day. But, of course, anytime you have an event like this, you want to stretch out the party to more than a week before. You know, we're trying to get the most bang for the buck as possible. So the number that always came up in numbers of meals is over about 1.5 million.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's – and that's from buffets to breakfast to lunch to dinner to late-night snacks to, you know, there's something going on every hour of the day. It is a 10-day – And I say 240 hours because it's 24 hours a day. There's the kitchens. Most of these massive kitchens work manned 24 hours a day, three shifts.
So how many cooks are we talking about? How big are these kitchens? Where are they?
Well, the exciting thing is when you get that kind of volume in food, the number I came up with and this isn't exact by any means. Well, we're looking in the neighborhood of about 6,000 servers and 1,700 cooks and 900 people working bars. And that sounds like a lot, but when you break it down to all the parties, that's, you know, a couple of bartenders for the party and five or six servers and, you know, two or three cooks because there's just a lot going on.
So are there these huge kitchens around the Twin Cities that you're preparing this stuff at?
Well, just remember the numbers that I'm looking at here doesn't include any of the hotels. Doesn't include any of the resorts. These are event centers that are put on where there's some control, some by caterers. But somehow the NFL has their finger in what can be done. It has to be reported through them. So they're the one keeping track. And, of course, keeping track for one reason, they get their percentage.
Okay. So lots of kitchens, lots of people working behind the scenes and to serve the food. I assume that a fair amount of this has to be transported to where it's going to go.
Yeah, and the transportation is just every refrigerated truck in town and every van, rental van available in town. And not only when I say in town, within a couple of hundred miles, because there's certainly a lot of transportation vehicles. But to transport food, you have to have, you know, you have to do it at holding temperatures, and we all know what the temperature is out there in the Midwest today.
It's holding pretty well.
Yeah, it's holding, but there's the other side of that. You have to be careful.
Because you don't want to freeze it. Huh?
Exactly. When we have salads and we have things like that, we have the other end of the spectrum. You can't leave it sit out in a truck all day because you'll come to a pile of wilted salad.
Which
wilted
gets treats. Us to, is this regulated in any way? You know, is food inspection taking place at either end of this?
Well, all of the places have to be licensed. Anybody that touches liquor has to have a server card. All of the vehicles that are used have to be certified for food. Both the places that make the food and the places that get the food delivered have to be licensed to do that. So all of that goes without saying. And yes, I can't even imagine how many additional inspectors, because the health department's always scrambling for people. So for this particular couple of weeks, or probably more than a month, because this inspection started long before the 10 days of Super Bowl that I talked about.
Well, we've heard a lot about the security in downtown Minneapolis around U.S. Bank Stadium. It's pretty secure. They've kind of clamped down on it. You can't even park in certain parts of the middle of the city anymore. Is there security around the food?
Well, that's, you know, it's something I didn't even put in my notes here, but it's something. You know, the old days when I'd go to food manufacturers, it was almost walk in the side door, walk through the manufacturing plant, find the chef, and find out what we're going to do. This day and age, because you're preparing food for such masses of people, for such an event like this, that there always is the chance, we know what's going on in our world today, that there is a lot more security. So kitchens are locked and trucks are locked. And you can't leave, you know, you can't leave anything unguarded. And the same with the background, depending on the level of security at the particular party, there's background checks on all your people. There's a level 1, 2, 3 of all the people that work for those functions that have to have their background checked. So it's a whole different world out there. And yes, that costs money and that has to be passed on to the event host.
And I assume you had your background checked then.
Yeah, that's scary. Yeah, yes, I did. And in fact, I had to have background check was security 1, 2, or 3. I was security 1 check and could go anywhere, any place, anytime. I guess you never see the results. You just get the approval or disapproval, I guess.
Will you be at any of these events? Will you be at the game?
Well, as of right now, I do not have a seat at the game. I have an invitation to the game, and I just came back to Fargo today. I finished my project, but there is another project looming that could start as early as tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. So that will let me know the answer to that question.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that if you're going to feed 1.5 million people and all these different venues, they're going to want certain kinds of things. First of all, it has to be sort of easy to eat, I imagine.
Well, you know, sometimes as we call it at Walt Disney World, handheld food, stuff that you could stand up handheld, carry on a conversation, shake somebody's hand, a slice of pizza, a hot dog, a hamburger, a slider, things like that. But there's also other foods. There's dips like the infamous spinach artichoke dip that was on a buffet for sit-down. But yet it came up as number three most requested. And I kind of made a list of, in order, the way what I saw is the most requested food. And, you know, I kind of look at the top 20 yuppie high-end chef-driven menus in Minneapolis, and none of the items I'm going to list would be their specialty, because we as chefs are looking for new wave, new flavor profiles, new presentations. But again, we're feeding the masses for the Super Bowl, so it's not a time to do some funky new food from Fiji Island with a new black garlic in this, because people are going to look at it like, whoa. That's not what we have in my hometown.
We don't have the time to describe it to you.
Right, either. Exactly.
You
right.
Know, it's a different ambiance than a restaurant. You mentioned that, you know, you've got 1.5 million servings, and you got to always plan a little extra or whatever. You know, you don't want anybody to go hungry. But then when all of that's done, there's going to be a fair amount of waste. What happens to all that stuff?
Well, there are contracts and pickups and deliveries with every charitable organization that needs food in town, everything from homeless shelters to Red Cross to Salvation Army.
This could be a real boon for them then.
Well, you know, it's a plus and a minus. The same as we had in Orlando at Walt Disney World and SeaWorld and Epcot, we have more food than we have people that need it.
Uh-huh.
There was a time in Orlando, for instance, that they didn't like bread that was more than a day old. They wouldn't eat pizza that was more than a day old pizza, because we had so much of it that they had to throw it away.
It never gone to college, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly.
A week old is still good.
Come to my house. Day-old bread, two-day-old bread, three-day-old bread. Pizza's been in the refrigerator for the weekend. It heats up pretty good.
Now, they're also drinking. So how do you plan for that, for the person who wants a beer or something else?
Well, interesting enough, I did a comparison here and just beer, for instance, and the top three beers in the country are Bud Light, Coors Light, and Miller Light. Surprise, surprise. Those were the most requested. Well, I don't want to confuse most requested with also the sponsorship money, because everybody is reliant on the sponsorship money, both not only the ads you see on television, but it's the signs you see around the city and radio and television and media, what you see in Facebook and Google, all that. So those three are the number three beer in the country. And, of course, those are the number three beers for all these events. But I found it rather interesting that because the Patriots are there, Sam Adams, which happens to be a high-end beer across the country, was in the top five. And then I was really proud to see that a lot of the events wanted to see one of the 100-plus craft beers from not only Minneapolis-St. Paul, but the whole Minnesota-Wisconsin region. So craft beers aren't a big comeback. And then when you look at cocktails, margaritas, Bloody Marys, and screwdrivers, of course, are way to the top. But I was also happy to see that there's lots of craft spirit establishments in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And craft spirits always get asked to make sure you have this on the bar. Make sure you have this on the bar, because we want to showcase Minneapolis as much as we can.
And there are some kids going there. I mean, they may not be going to the game with the seats priced the way they are, but there will be a few there, I'm sure. But what kinds of things are on the menu for kids?
Well, kids, boy, it gets even more, I hate to say this, but even more boring. Because, yes, the parents, you know, we're all happy to see that McDonald's and Burger King now put fresh fruit as an option for French fries and onion rings and greasy food. But it still comes down to mac and cheese and hot dogs and pizza. And then there's always, well, let's have a fresh fruit kebab. Let's have a fresh fruit salad or something like that. So there's always the one item. We have to put that there so we can, nobody says that we're bad to the kids. But pretty much those three were way up on top. And sliders, but again, hamburgers. But pretty generic kids' food that we see on most of the menus around Minneapolis.
Well, bon appetit. 1.5 million people being served by the group you're working with, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
meal preparation.
The numbers always amaze people, but the thing is, when you break it down by kitchen, by chef, by staff, it's, you know, everybody has their little small piece of what's the big picture. You always look at, oh, it's just daunting, that kind of numbers. But when you divide it back down to 1,700 cooks, all of a sudden the numbers get, oh, I'm preparing for 500 today. Or
well, during the game, if you're there, jump up and down so we can notice you.
Yeah, will do. Thank you.
If you have a question for Chef Rosie, you can ask it by emailing us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. What's happening is next.
Hi, I'm Main Street's Ashley Thornburg. Have you heard of our Short and Sweet member drive? It's the one where you support us with your membership investment, and we send truffles.
200 pounds of chocolate.
We need some dessert muscle.
Somebody has to roll them in cocoa powder.
Thankfully, there's the hardworking staff of Nicole's Fine Pastry.
People start coming in at 6 in the morning.
Last year, Nicole's sent out thousands of truffles. Did you get a box? Want one this year? Now's your chance. Go to prairiepublic.org.
Well, it's 5:55 a.m. truffle time.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Well, nobody asked that question better than Marvin Gaye. He puts a lot of soul into it. It's time to find out what's happening. And Christine McClellan, one of Prairie Public's wonderful staff, is with me to look at our list of stuff to do.
Yeah, so first up, we got La Boheme. These are classes about La Boheme. This is at the Jamestown Arts Center, and it's going to be Monday, February 5th, and then Monday, February 12th, and Monday, February 19th. And there's going to be a simulcast of La Boheme live from the Met on February 24th. So they're going to learn about what makes Puccini's opera such a perennial favorite, and you can join them to find out why as they explore what is possibly the most beloved opera ever composed. So the Art Center's Live in HD series pairs three classes on the opera La Boheme with a visit to Fargo's Century 10 Theater in Fargo is going to live stream the performance from the Metropolitan Opera on Saturday, February 24th. So the hours of the class are 5:30 to 7 p.m. The simulcast is 11:55 p.m. in Fargo, and the class is $50 or $40 for members, and this includes tickets for the simulcast.
And it's Jamestown and Fargo, the two cities working together on La Boheme. The post-Groundhog Day jam session is Saturday in Valley City at the Barnes County Museum. The Whoever Can Come Band will be hosting another free and open to all post-Groundhog Day jam session at the museum from 1 to 4 on Saturday. 45 days from now is the first day of spring, so let's be optimistic. It's, again, from 1 to 4 at the Barnes County Museum on Saturday afternoon, and it's free.
Paint Your Pet at the Taube Museum of Art in Minot is going to be Friday, February 2nd at 6 p.m. Join them for this fun painting class to learn how to paint your pet. No experience necessary, and they'll supply all the materials along with a little wine and appetizers. So for non-members, this is $50, and for members, it's $45.
The Bismarck Mandan Symphony presents Brahms, Mahler, and Mozart Saturday in Bismarck at the Bellmeyhus Auditorium. You can hear the symphony in all its glory with Gustav Mahler's Adagietto from the Fifth Symphony and Brahms' Last Symphony, and all kinds of music as well related to those wonderful composers, Brahms, Mahler, and Mozart. It's 7:30 in the evening and Saturday, again, at the Bellmeyhus. It's $15 to $35 for this symphony concert.
There's an artist reception for Mark Applebaum that's going to be at the Plains Art Museum in Fargo on Saturday, February 3rd from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. He's sometimes called the mad scientist of music or a modern-day John Cage. He masterfully creates artworks of signs and symbols meant to be interpreted and played by live musicians. He's known internationally as an avant-garde composer, and he has garnered recent attention for the visual nature of his work in resurrecting the art of creating graphic scores. So this is going to be also an exhibition at the Plains Art Museum titled Mark Applebaum Picturing Music, and that'll be on display from February 1st through June 9th. But this artist reception is free.
All right. Over the River and Through the Woods is the name of a show at the Fire Hall Theater in Grand Forks that opens this evening and runs through Sunday. Nick is a single guy from New Jersey. Even though his parents moved to Florida, both sets of grandparents still live in Jersey, and he sees them every Sunday for dinner. When Nick decides to pursue his dream job out of state, the news does not sit so well with his family. So Over the River and Through the Woods is the name of the show. It's 7:30 Thursday through Saturday with a 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday. The cost is $15 for adults, $12 for students, and senior citizens 65 and older. It's Over the River and Through the Woods at the Fire Hall Theater in Grand Forks.
The True Story of the Three Little Pigs is going to be Saturday, February 3rd, and Sunday, February 4th at the Stage at Island Park in Fargo. It's a musical delight for all ages. This pork-filled tale finally puts the big bad wolf on trial for the destruction and dismay he caused to not one, not two, but three poor little pigs. But is the wolf guilty, or can he shake off familiar accusations and convince an audience of skeptics that he is actually friend to swine and not foe? In this continuation of a classic tale, the audience decides the verdict at the end. So Saturday at 5 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Stage at Island Park, and the cost is $5 to $10.
That sounds like fun. Well, my pick for this week is the Tom Petty Tribute. It's Friday evening. It'll be at the Sanctuary Event Center in downtown Fargo. Tom Petty's death last year shocked fans around the world. Fargo Moorhead artists come together this Friday to honor the late rocker with I Won't Back Down. That's a nice theme for Tom Petty. Bands like the Pat Leonard's Band, the Wicked Bees, the Human Element, Big and Hungry will perform their favorite Petty tunes. The music starts at 8 o'clock, again at the Sanctuary Event Center in downtown Fargo, Friday evening. Tickets for this ID-only show are $15 in advance, $20 the day of the show. That's what's happening.
This is Dakota Datebook for February 1st. The 30th Bombardment Squadron, which would one day be stationed in North Dakota, has its roots in World War I, where it first formed as the 30th Aero Squadron. The men in the unit trained as pilots, but due to circumstances, they became more well acquainted with construction jobs. While still in the U.S., they helped build Fort Kelly in Texas, and when they were sent off to Europe, many began working in a machine shop to repair aircraft and help train other pilots. By the time the Great War was over and the squadron demobilized, the men had never seen combat. In the time before World War II, the unit became the 30th Bombardment Squadron, and it first served as a Reserve Army Air Service unit before being upgraded to a regular unit in 1932. Their mission was to provide military transport and do search and rescue missions. In 1939, the squadron received a Boeing B-178 Flying Fortress, and their role was upgraded. Consequently, the 30th Bombardment Squadron was ready for combat when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. They joined the fight and went on to participate in 9 campaigns during World War II. They also fought in the Korean War, now with B-29s. After the armistice in 1953, their now dated planes were sent to reclamation and replaced with B-47 Stratojets as part of the Strategic Air Command. In 1960, they were equipped with new B-52 heavy bombers and reassigned to the 4133rd Strategic Wing in Grand Forks. They flew training missions there until the B-47s were phased out in 1962. The squadron's last day as an operational unit was on this date, in 1963. However, the squadron is not gone entirely because on September 9th, 1985, it consolidated with the Air Demonstration Squad, better known as the Thunderbirds. And with this consolidation, the Thunderbirds inherited all the honors bestowed on the 30th Bombardment Squadron. So, if you ever find yourself at a Thunderbirds air show, keep in mind the unit's impressive thread of history that has roots in North Dakota. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Lucid Thomas. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
Just a few minutes left in today's Main Street program, but enough time to remind you that we are in our short and sweet membership drive, and this is your opportunity to secure a pound of fine cocoa truffles from Nicole's Fine Pastry with your pledge of $10 a month as a sustained member to Prairie Public. That's $120 a year, and you are supporting what you're listening to now. It's a wonderful kind of gift for both of us. I'm Doug Hamilton, the host of Main Street, and I'm here with Bill Thomas, our director of radio.
And this short and sweet drive, which you can participate in, by the way, by simply calling us up, 800 359-4145 or going to our spot on the internet at prairiepublic.org. The Short and Sweet Drive, it's interesting. It's become a kind of a tradition now with a lot of people. We've had so many people who have just done it year after year. We've actually done it for 19 years now. And there are some people who have really kind of built up a list. And there's a deal with this Short and Sweet Drive. Obviously, you're making the contribution to support the programming on public radio, but this special thank you gift has got people pledging enough that they can send out several packages of these delicious truffles, and they send them out to, you know, the kid who moved to New York City and grandparents in Arizona.
A little taste of Fargo.
And yeah, they go all over the place. And people get them and give them to their colleagues at work. There's a NDSU professor who gets them and hands them out to his students. And like I say, it's become a bit of a tradition around this time of year. And the truffles, of course, are the Valentine's and chocolate go together. That makes a lot of sense. And then having them be supporting public radio is just like it for a lot of people. That's an extra thing that makes them more fun. And they're just a wonderful, affectionate thing to do between grandparents and grandchildren and old married couples and sweethearts and colleagues. You can take part in this drive. It's short, so it doesn't last very long. It's just over by this weekend. 800-359-4145. Go online to prairiepublic.org, make that contribution, and we'll send out the truffles wherever you say. You'll be supporting public radio and having a great Valentine.
And, you know, we've been over to Nicole's Fine Pastries a couple of times during our Short and Sweet campaign over the years and broadcast live as from the place they're actually making the truffles and seen the process. And let me tell you, a handmade truffle isn't something that just rolls off an assembly line. It takes a little while, and it takes very good ingredients, like kind of like what we think Prairie Public does, too. We try to find the best ingredients we can to share with you, whether it's news or music programming, the kind of information that makes this place on your dial an important place to set your radio. This is the service we want to provide to you, and it's easy for you to secure it for yourself, for your family, and for everybody else who's listening and isn't a member by giving us a call at 800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org.
Your contribution goes to keep the programming going. Yeah, the truffles are great, and they're wonderful for Valentine's Day, but the programming from Prairie Public is here every day, and your support makes it possible. In any amount, $10 a month or more, we'll send out truffles, 15, 2 boxes, 23 boxes, and so on. But the programming comes with whatever kind of support you can give. 800-359-4145, prairiepublic.org.
Well, on Friday, we'll talk with Montana natives Keir Graff and James Grady. They've contributed to a collection of hard-edged Western tales titled Montana Noir. News director Dave Thompson drops by every Friday to talk about the week's big stories. And Matt Olin is a Friday regular as well, and he's going to review two movies that have been named for Oscars, actually, The Post and Phantom Thread. So we hope you can join us for Main Street on Friday and consider becoming a Short and Sweet member of Main Street. And enjoy the rest of your day.